I was there from the womb, and I'll die in here.
Welcome to our booth.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our Defender 7 Monday Night History Broadcast with your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis, and I am your co-host and general of the Defender 7, Bobby Ormsby. If you're new, just tuning in to us, welcome. Hope you enjoy our shows as much as we like putting them on. Be sure to check out our Facebook national page by typing in the search box, all capital letters, Defenders 7. Now, before you click that join button, just know that we expect all of our members and our future members to participate throughout everything we do here in the Defender 7. When you get a chance, swing over to our YouTube page and do us a favor and hit that subscribe button. Now, the only way that we're able to do what we do here at the Defender 7 is through money, of course. If you will type in all lowercase letters, www.defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two small I's, dot, that's our website. And on our website, we have a store and a donate button. 100% of all proceeds from sales from our store and any donations we bring in go back to our communities throughout all 50 states in a time of need. So again, please, by all means, purchase something from our store or click that donate button. Help us to help you and your community in a time of need. We're also on MeWe. If you click on organizations and scroll down, Defender 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. And now for tonight and all of our shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, if you're too scared to call in, check into our live chat room. Come chat with us. But the number to call to participate, area code 914-205-5773. Again, number to call, area code 914-205-5773. And I am now going to turn the microphone over to your host, our Colonel Kimberly Purvis. Good evening, Kimberly.
Good evening.
How are you?
Tired.
Aren't we all?
I'm so pissed off. I am so pissed off. I had probably 30 sets of scrubs. And I said, you know what? I'm not going back into nursing. I quit. I'll just throw them all away. Guess what?
Nah.
Now I'm going back into nursing, and I got to fucking bite scrubs.
Oh, shit.
And, yeah, they went from I just bought mine from Walmart, majority of mine. And so they were $5.88. They're now $13 for basic. They're called basic core. And they're $13 now. What the fuck, man? I am so pissed. I bought a pair of Skechers back in August, brand new for nursing, right? Damn, I bought it from their actual store, their warehouse. And something I forgot, they run a half a size smaller until they stretch out to your foot. Because my left foot is bigger than my right foot, which is a pain in the ass buying shoes. And so when I buy shoes, one shoe is going to fit better than the other one. So that's why I buy it. Like, if I could get it, I'm between a 10 or an 11, right? So if I get a 10 and a half, one's barely too big and the other one's slightly snug. And so they're still in the shoebox. I have not even worn them yet, which I should do it. But good news, I got good news and bad news. I'm going to start with the bad news. My dog is a dumbass. I told Bobby this earlier. That stupid ass, she got in my medicine bag, climbed up on top of the counter, or not the counter, but I have an end table, and it's got books and stuff stacked on it, so it's kind of high. Had my medicine bag. That little shit dug out my stomach medicine, chewed the bottle, and ate about, 20 of my Zofran. And I had, it was a brand new bottle, and I found 7 of them. And I'm like, oh, my God, you are so freaking stupid. But she's been fine all day. I called the vet. They said they can either give her something to make her vomit or just watch her and see what happens. And do you know poison control for dogs charges you $75 to answer a question? I said, never mind. Huh?
$75 to answer a question over the phone.
Yep.
Screw that.
That's what I said. But she's fine. They said she might become a little drowsy and stuff like that, and it might constipate her. This little shit has been running around the house, the yard, back and forth. She's like a dog on crack, and I think it just sped her up. But she won't have stomach problems for a while. But dogs can have Zofran. They give Zofran to dogs. So, but the good news, well, that's good news. Well, she's fine now. She's not, acting all stupid. I've been listening to her heart, and because they said they could slower heart rate, but now she's fine. But in other news, I called the state of Tennessee, the Board of Nursing, and I told her, I said, look, I know this is becoming a conspiracy. I don't give a crap what the problem is, but you better fix my damn license. I told her I was not hanging up until she fixed it. And 30 minutes I stayed online, on the phone, and come to find out, supposedly, the woman who does the reinstatement in Tennessee has been out sick with COVID for the last 2 months. I call bullshit. She might have had COVID, and she might have been home sick. I'll give her that. But not for 2 months.
No.
So,
and there's nobody
and she hasn't even,
her position. And she must be related to Buddha.
They said that three supervisors have been dealing with her stuff. I said, really? Because if that's the case, she can't have that damn many people because I emailed her 10 times. And so I emailed the supervisor. The damn they don't even know who has my file or my, the charge to reinstate it. So I said, look. I said, how about this? I email you my paper, and you give it to whoever's going to do it. So I emailed her, And it took like 15 minutes for the email to even get there, because you know how Gmail runs. It could take, you know, 5 minutes or 5 years for you to get it. And it took about 30 minutes. They had me on hold for about 30 minutes. And they finally did my reinstated it. So, thank God. It only cost me $200 and pulling my hair out. But it's finally done.
Yeah.
So now I can... And then I had to go and pay $92 to do a CPR class. $92 freaking. That's what Kansas Red Cross charges. The Red Cross in Tennessee charges $45 for a CPR first aid class. Freaking extortion. You'd think they'd want, you know, more people to learn CPR and stuff like that. They don't want no one taking the class. Damn.
I'm seeing a lot of commercials for Tim. For hospitals, right now Mesocordia, I think, is the main one, that are willing to pay you $10,000 to take a nursing course. They're willing to give you a scholarship.
Wow.
And yes, well, think about it. All the ones that they're going after, the young vaccinated people, because the experienced ones don't want to get vaccinated. So
but here's the
young
thing. Yeah, but do they not realize that an inexperienced nurse can kill patients because of their lack of experience? That's why when you're hired as a new nurse, or at least it was when I was going through the ranks, you get a mentor.
Yeah.
And your mentor has had to have been a nurse for at least 7 years before they can mentor you. So
I know.
Good luck. But I'm going into home health, and I don't have to get the vaccine. And it's funny because the woman at the Red Cross said that, yes, you fully vaccinated. I said, well, guess what? I'm not getting it. And she says, this is what she said. She goes, well, they're assuming everybody has been fully vaccinated. I said, well, you know what they say about assuming. And she
right.
says, but you have to wear a mask. And I'm thinking, how the fuck am I going to do CPR with a mask on?
Yeah. I guess to take it off to,
probably.
You know what, Timmy? That's another thing. There are going to be a lot of people dying because these new nurses and EMTs are going to be so fearful, they're not going to want to do CPR, especially unvaccinated people.
But here's the thing. They have AMBU bags on an ambulance to do CPR. They don't even do mouth-to-mouth. They use AMBU bags. And every hospital room has an AMBU bag. Every nursing home has mouth guards. And they're at the nursing station. So
I understand look at some of the shit that's going on. You've got a hospital that has... You know, that's putting plastic bags that point blank says don't put over a person's head over people's head because, you know, they don't have, you know, because they're not vaccinated, that they have to wear a mask, you know. Or,
I know.
You know, or not treating children. It's just, it's crazy.
Well, that's why I'm doing the pediatric home health. And like I said, I don't mind wearing a mask while treating a sickly child. I have no issue with that at all.
I don't either.
So
that's not the same as wearing one to go shopping.
Oh, yeah, they can kiss my ass. I ain't wearing one going shopping. I don't care. But did you guys see where the New York Fire Department, 18,000 protested today?
Mm-hmm.
Walked out. And they said nobody showed up. CNN said nobody showed up for this protest. 18,000 firemen and first responders walked out. Good. And I hope they serve.
Have an article.
Don't take this the wrong way, anyone who's listening. I don't wish harm on anybody. But here's the thing. If you've got every single person that walks out on a job first, and then Biden and that freaking sick fuck Cooper Anderson said that they should all be fired. Good. I hope every cop, first responder, nurse, trucker, you name it, get fired, walked off, whatever, because you're not going to have shit to do for employees. And how long is it going to take? Probably all of 2 weeks of having nobody, no one to answer the calls, no one to do anything, because what it's going to do is all they're going to do is just call the people back, hey, please come back. We'll change the mandate.
Yeah, but a lot of them
and hire them back.
Here's something else. I don't know if you've seen it or not. I just saw it last night. I should have shared it. But now they're trying to blame truckers and red states for the supply chain issues. They're saying that the truckers are deliberately not going into California to get
what
you call it, so that they have to go to the ports in red states. And I'm like, what? Are you fucking crazy?
But you know what? It's not true. Trucker did respond to that. I saw the video about that. He said it's not true. But here's the thing. Guess what? You want me to call them? When I say call you, I don't mean you personally. I mean anyone who thinks this way. Let me call you a wambulance, okay? You live in a blue state. It sucks to be you because of where you live. I know a few of us live in – well, I live – my governor is a Democrat, but we have all Republicans in the House, and our Senate is all Republicans.
Yeah,
and
no,
she gets outvoted all the
good.
Time.
It ain't doing any good. I said, so do
what?
I, but it ain't doing any good.
What?
A Democrat governor with a Republican House.
Oh, shit, ours does. We have Dr. Marshall.
No.
He's an actual doctor. He just won.
I shared with you what Governor Wolf just did. He made an executive order of a dialogue that college students have to have every time they have sex, and they're supposed to record it so that if they don't do what they're supposed to do and it goes to court, he can watch it personally.
He said, no, this is what he said. In that article, he said it needs to be sent to him. So he can view it to make sure. Yeah, sure it is, you sick fuck.
What?
Look, no, I'm going to say this. No means no. If the girl says yes 100 times and says no one time, it's no.
Right.
Okay. There's no.
No is never a safe word. If you're in the kinky sex, you take another word. You know, you want to say no. But
how about this?
No is no.
How about this? Get your ass off of me now. Is that assertive enough? Because it's pretty much all
yeah.
it is. And he said, and the girl can't say yeah or sure. No, it has to be a definitive yes and no. It's not a yes. So.
And I remember back in the 80s when they first came out with that bullshit that they had to ask before unbuttoning each button. You know, and then kiss. And I was 18. I mean, you know, I was born in 64. So in the 80s, I was just, you know, getting on my groove. And a guy tried that with me. And I told him, yo, I said, if you don't got the balls to do it, then you need to get the fuck out. I said, you know, if I'm not happy, I don't want something, I'll say no. But I am not going to play this every other question because you're destroying the freaking mood.
I know. It's his sick way of getting video.
Pornography?
And, yeah. So, I guess you guys have heard by now that Alec Baldwin about the thing with him. So,
yeah.
He's
an idiot.
And this is what he said to a cop last year about shooting someone, an unarmed person, right? I wonder how it feels to shoot an unarmed person accidentally. And exactly to the day that he said that to a cop, he shot that attorney's wife. And the gun was loaded with a live round. And it was a prop gun. Oh,
so
now,
this isn't the second time. This isn't the first time he shot someone?
Oh, no, no. Last year he had said to a cop because of George Floyd and all that bullshit, killing, you know, whatever. Well, George Floyd wasn't shot, but whoever. And he told the cop, he goes, I wonder what it feels like to shoot an unarmed person or whatever it was he said. And someone said, be careful what you wish for, because he did that same exact thing to the day.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. They've tied it all in. Her husband works for the attorney, the law firm that's associated with the Clintons and the Russia probe and the Durham report and all of the lies. And instead of him getting killed, they had him kill his wife. And they used Alec Baldwin because she's a cinematographer, and that's what happened. But you know what's going to happen? Not a damn thing. They're going to charge him with manslaughter, but they won't.
I understand what you're saying, and I can get with that. But everything else going, I don't know that he consciously did it. I'm not saying that it wasn't
for
it to happen. But I don't think Alec Baldwin, you know, as much as
Alec Baldwin didn't deliberately do it. No, he didn't deliberately do it. Whoever does the props is the one that did it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and that's what happened.
Yeah,
but
they've been having
the
problems.
It's still a weapon. You need to
check. You should have checked it.
Before you fire it. I don't care if it's a blank or not, but it wasn't a blank. It's a live round. And blanks have red tips. Well, they're supposed to, in theory. And if the dumbass would have checked it and would have seen, hey, this ain't a fake bullet.
Well, I thought he thought it was empty because it was a rehearsal. I thought that's what he said.
It doesn't matter.
So whatever the point.
You're supposed to check your weapon.
He should have checked it. He should have opened it up and checked it, and he would have seen that it was loaded. And then, you know whether it was with, whether it was a blank duds or whatever, it was loaded, and he should not have pointed it at her. I don't know if he handles guns regularly or just for movies.
He
handles them.
Look at the movies he's done.
Right.
He knows how to handle a gun.
Yeah. He's handled them enough to know. He should have checked.
Oh, yeah.
He is totally
But either way, he's not going to be – they're not going to do shit to him because it's Alec Baldwin, and I think that's the reason why they used him. But if anybody else would get charged with involuntary manslaughter.
Right.
But, okay. So, anyway, tonight's show, we're going to just continue on. I said I was going to start with just going down and completely covering each empire. And the bad thing is, this damn website, they changed everything, and they alphabetized every single empire. Instead of going down by time and stuff like that, no, these fuckers put it all in alphabetical order. So
that's not
so
now, alphabetical order.
Well, I'm starting with Germany because there's quite a few other ones that I don't want to start back at the A's, but it's purple. They've got it lit up purple for the ones I've already gone through. So that'll help. But I'm going to start with Germany. So the German Empire, or the Imperial State of Germany, is also referred to as Imperial Germany, who the Second Reich of the Kaiserreich, as well as simply Germany, was the period of the time of the German Reich from the unification of Germany in 1871 until the November Revolution in 1918, when the German Reich changed its form of government from a monarchy to a republic. It was founded on January 18, 1871, when the South German states, except for Austria, had joined the North German Confederation, and the new constitution came into force on April 16, changing the name of the federal state of the German Empire and introducing the title of the German Emperor for Wilhelm I, King of Prussia, from the House of Hohenzollern. Berlin remained its capital, and Otto von Bismarck, Minister-President of Prussia, became Chancellor, the head of government. As these events occurred, the Prussian-led North German Confederation and its southern German allies were still engaged in the Franco-Prussian War. I mean, it's nice that they, you know, as they changed it, you know, they still kept some stuff, you know what I'm saying? They just didn't go,
right.
I'm going to change it all. The German Empire consisted of 26 states, and each with their own nobility, 4 constituent kingdoms, 6 grand duchies, 5 duchies, I guess it's duchies.
Yeah, a duchy,
whatever
a
the fuck.
A duchy. A duchy.
A big duchy. Yeah.
Duke, yeah.
6 grand ones and 5 regular ones. And 7 principalities, 3 free Hanseatic cities, and 1 imperial territory. While Prussia was one of the 4 kingdoms in the realm, it contained about 2/3 of the empire's population and territory. And Prussian dominance had also been constitutionally established since the King of Prussia was also the German emperor, also known as Kaiser, or Kaiser, however you want to pronounce it. After 1850, the states of Germany had rapidly become industrialized, with particular strengths in coal, iron, and then later on, steel. Also chemicals and railways. In 1871, Germany had a population of 41 million people. That's a lot in that little area of what the German Empire was by 1913. And so this had increased to 68 million. A heavily rural collection of states in 1815, the now united Germany became predominantly urban. During its 47 years of existence, the German Empire was an industrial, technological, and scientific giant. And by 1913, Germany was the largest economy in the continental Europe and the third largest in the world. From 1871 to 1890, Otto von Bismarck's tenure as the first, hold on a second, I got to make this print bigger because I can't see shit. The longest serving chancellor, and was marked by relative liberalism, but it became more conservative afterwards. Broad reforms and the culture camp marked his period in the office. Late in Bismarck's chancellorship, and in spite of his earlier personal opposition, Germany became involved in colonialism, claiming much of the leftover territory that was yet unclaimed in the scramble for Africa. And it managed to build the third largest colonial empire at the time, after the British and the French ones. Okay, so after the British and the French, the Germans became the third. As a colonial state, it sometimes clashed with the interests of the other European powers, especially the British Empire. During its colonial expansion, the German Empire committed the Herero, okay, I can't pronounce it. I'm having a brain fart. In the Kwama genocide, Germany became a great power boasting a rapidly developing rail network and the world's strongest army and fastest growing industrial base. Starting very small in 1871, in a decade, the Navy became second only to Britain's Royal Navy after the removal of Otto von Bismarck by Wilhelm II in 1890. The empire embarked on Wolpolitik, a bellicose new course that ultimately contributed to the outbreak of World War I. In addition, Bismarck's successors were incapable of maintaining their predecessors' complex, shifting, and overlapping alliances, which had kept Germany from being diplomatically isolated. And this period was marked by various factors influencing the emperor's decision, which were often perceived as contradictory or unpredictable by the public. In 1879, the German Empire consolidated with dual alliance with Austria-Hungary, followed by the Triple Alliance with Italy in 1882. It also retained a strong diplomatic tie to the Ottoman Empire. When the Great Crisis of 1914 arrived, Italy left the alliance and the Ottoman Empire formally allied with Germany. So at the First World War, German plans to capture Paris quickly in the autumn of 1914 had failed, and the war on the Western Front became a stalemate. So the Allied naval blockade caused severe shortages of food. However, Imperial Germany had success on the Eastern Front. It occupied a large amount of territory to its east following the Treaty of the German Declaration of Unrestricted Submarine Warfare in early 1917 contributed to bringing the United States into the war. In October 1918, after the failed spring offensive, the German armies were in retreat. Allies Austria-Hungary and the Ottoman Empire had collapsed, and Bulgaria had surrendered. So the empire collapsed in November of 1918 revolution with the abdications of its monarchs, which left the post-war federal republic to govern a devastated populace. And it was faced with post-war reparations in the cost of 132 billion gold marks, which is $269 billion, or $240 billion in euros. But the thing is, the U.S. dollar ain't worth shit to the euro or the British pound anymore. So that actually should be changed. Because right now, if you think about it, 1,000 U.S. dollars is 700 pounds, British pounds, or euros. Then if it was in 1921, it was roughly $32 billion back then. So you see how much inflation has gone up since. From 1921 to 2019, it went from about $32 billion to $270 billion. That's a freaking lot of inflation. The economic devastation of the war and the unrest among its population are considered leading factors in the rise of Adolf Hitler and Nazism. So the German Confederation had been created by the act of the Congress of Vienna on June 8, 1815, as a result of the Napoleonic Wars. After being alluded to in Article 6 of the 1814 Treaty of Paris, the liberal revolutions of 1848 were crushed after the alliance between the educated, well-off bourgeois liberals and the urban Aristons broke down. Otto von Bismarck's pragmatic realpolitik, which appealed to the peasants as well as the traditional aristocracy, took its place. So Bismarck sought to extend Hohenzollern throughout the German state. To do so meant unification of the German states and the exclusion of Prussia's main German rival, Austria, from the subsequent German Empire. He envisioned a conservative Prussian-dominated Germany. Three wars led to the military successes and helped to persuade German people to do this. The Second Schleswig War against Denmark in 1864 and the Austro-Prussian War in 1866 and the Franco-Prussian War in 1870 to 1871. So the German Confederation ended as a result of the Austro-Prussian War of 1866 between the constituent Confederate entities and the Austrian Empire and its allies on the side, on one side, and Prussia and its allies on the other. So the war resulted in partial replacement of the Confederation in 1867. By North German Confederation, comprising the 22 states north of the main river. The patriotic fervor generated by the Franco-Prussian War overwhelmed the remaining opposition to a unified Germany and the four states south of the Main. And then during November 1870, they joined the North German Confederation by treaty. No, do you guys have any issues with your damn internet again? Like I am today?
No.
Yeah, it's a little iffy right now, but I also am in the middle of a thunderstorm.
Well, yeah, true. It's not just like the TV, the cable, the internet. We'll just shut off and come back on, and then shut off and come back on. And so, like a Prime, Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu, all of those channels, they just kept shutting off. So I said, screw it, and I'll just watch regular TV. And then Pat was saying with his PS5, it's dragging ass really, really slow. So I've just been having issues, and my internet just keeps glitching and going back and forth. It's driving me nuts, which isn't a far drive. Okay, so the foundation of the German Empire on December 10th, 1870, the North German Confederation Reichstag renamed the Confederation the German Empire and gave the title of the German Emperor to William I, the King of Prussia, I'm not reading that German word, of the Confederation. Starts to be Bundesprosidium. Like ducks keep them from flopping, is what they call a bra. The new constitution and the title emperor came into effect on January 1st, 1871. You could polish a turd, but it's still a turd. And when they renamed it, they got rid of one name because they thought it sounded better. Now it's still the same people, same government, just a different name. So during the siege of Paris on January 18th, 1871, William accepted to be proclaimed emperor in the Hall of Mirrors at the Palace of Versailles. The second German constitution adopted the Reichstag on April 14th, 1871, and proclaimed by the emperor on April 16th, was substantially based upon Bismarck's North German constitution. The political system remained the same. The empire had a parliament called the Reichstag, which was elected by universal male suffrage. However, the original constituencies drawn in 1871 were never redrawn to reflect the growth of urban areas. As a result, by the time of the Great Depression of the German cities in the 1890s and 1900s, rural areas were grossly overrepresented. That's kind of like what happens in some of our states when they draw the lines of where to for voting. I forget what that's called. It's kind of like where they'll make it like democratically controlled, and they make sure that. You know what I'm saying? How they redraw the voters' lines. Now, that's what they did. And so some areas had too many representatives, and that's kind of like California. Northern California has hardly any representatives because they're all in South California where all the Democrats are. And so that's what they did in Germany. The legislation also required the consent of the Bundesrat, the Federal Council of Deputies, from the 27th state. Executive power was vested in the emperor or Kaiser, who was assisted by a chancellor, which is responsible only to him. So the emperor was given extensive powers by the Constitution, and he alone appointed and dismissed the chancellor, was the supreme commander-in-chief of the armed forces, the final arbiter of all foreign affairs, and could also disband the Reichstag to call for new elections. Officially, the chancellor was a one-man cabinet and was responsible for the conduct of all state affairs. So kind of like our government right now. if you think about it. And think about how much power Nancy Pelosi has. And she's just the Speaker of the House. So it's kind of the same thing. One person should not have that much power. Although nominally a federal empire and league of equals, in practice, the empire was dominated by the largest and most powerful state, Prussia. Prussia stretched across the northern two-thirds of the New Reich and contained three-fifths of its population. The imperial crown was hereditary in the ruling house of Prussia, the House of Hohenzollern. With the exception of 1872 to 1873 and 1892 to 1894, the chancellor was always simultaneously the prime minister of Prussia with 17 out of 58 votes in the Bundesrat. Berlin needed only a few votes from the smaller states to exercise effective control. See, so we're not the only one who uses that kind of, you know, like with the House and the Senate. You know, you only need some, like a simple majority or a major majority. So I didn't realize that other countries use the same shit. So Bismarck's post 1871 foreign policy was conservative and sought to preserve the balance of power in Europe. British historian Eric Hobsbawm. Concludes that he remained undisputed world champion at the game of multilateral diplomatic chess for almost 20 years after 1871, devoting himself exclusively and successfully to maintaining peace between the powers. This was a departure from his adventurous foreign policy for Prussia, where he favored strength and expansion, punctuating this by saying, "The great question of the age are not settled by speeches and majority votes." This was the era of 1848 to 1849, but by iron and blood. Bismarck's chief concern was that France would plot revenge after its defeat in the Franco-Prussian War. So as the French lacked the strength to defeat Germany by themselves, they sought an alliance with Russia, which would trap Germany between the two in a war, which actually happened in 1914. Bismarck wanted to prevent this at all costs and maintain friendly relations with the Russians, and hereby formed an alliance with them and Austria-Hungary, the Dachshund League of the Three Emperors. That's what we're calling it, the Dachshund, and that's not what it's called, but I can't pronounce it. In 1881, the alliance was further cemented by a separate non-aggression pact with Russia called Reinsurance Treaty, which was signed in 1887. During this period, individuals within the German military were advocating a preemptive strike against Russia. But Bismarck knew that such ideas were foolhardy. So he once wrote that the most brilliant victories would not avail against the Russian nation because of its climate, its desert, and its frugality, and having but one frontier to defend, and because it would leave Germany with another bitter, resentful neighbor. Wow. Sounds like Canada. Meanwhile, the chancellor remained wary of any foreign policy developments that looked even remotely warlike. In 1886, he moved to stop an attempted sale of horses to France because they might be used for cavalry, and also ordered an investigation into large Russian purchases of medicine from a German chemical works. So Bismarck stubbornly refused to listen to George Herbert Munster, ambassador to France, who reported back that the French were not seeking a war and were desperate for peace at all costs. So Bismarck and most of his contemporaries were conservative-minded and focused their foreign policy attention on Germany's neighboring states. In 1914, 60% of German foreign investment was in Europe, as opposed to just 5% of British investment. So most of the money went to developing nations such as Russia that lacked the capital or technical knowledge to industrialize their own. The construction of the Baghdad Railway, financed by German banks, was designed to eventually connect Germany with the Ottoman Empire and the Persian Gulf. But it also collided with the British and Russian geopolitical interests. Conflict over Baghdad Railway was resolved in June 1914. Not that I don't know if you guys know this or not, or if it's how true it is. So they wanted to do that to connect Germany to the Middle East. But China is getting ready to build a major highway or something from China all the way to Afghanistan, so they can control, China will control that. I don't know if you guys heard that or not, from China's plans. After,
seriously?
Biden, yeah.
That's going to be big-ass job. That's a major job, the investment. Now, that's infrastructure.
Yeah. But they want to control the Middle East. That's what China wants to do. So Germany wanted to do that. Huh?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. They're going about it the right way. They're buying it. Not trying to, you know what I mean? In other words.
No, I know.
The Brits, the Russians, the Americans, we all went in there fighting for it, trying to snatch it from them. The Chinese, they're going in and buying it from them.
Well, see, here's the thing.
There's some dirty deals, but that's beside the point.
But here's the thing about that. But here's the thing about that. China wants to go in, and they want to get all those mineral deposits and also the heroin and poppy fields and all that shit so they can take control of it. So here, we'll pay for it. We'll help you do it. But it's kind of like one of them backroom deals. Okay, it's not 50-50. It's 70-30. I get 70, you get 30.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
That's what
they're doing it the smart way.
True. But see, here's the thing. That's the reason why, I don't care what anybody says, this is my opinion. That's why Biden pulled out of Afghanistan as fast as he did, so China can go in there and do it. See, Germany tried to do, but what Germany tried to do was build, you know, have a roadway into the Persian Gulf, you know, a railway. Well, that's another thing, as the railway. And so, but that goes into a way to get the goods from there to Germany and stuff. But that's also an issue for India. India has all kinds of textiles and medicine and all kinds of stuff. But here their problem is they have no way of distribution of it to all these other countries, except their doctors. Their doctors leave India and come to America. They're smart, but that's why India is still a third world country for the most. Well, I won't say all of India, because there's two major cities in India that they're far from third world. So for 30 years, Germany struggled against Britain to be Europe's leading industrial power. A representative of Germany's industry was a steel giant, Krupp, whose first factory was built in Essen. I have no idea where Essen's at. By 1902, the factory alone became a great city within its own streets, its own police force, fire departments, traffic laws, and there were 150 kilometers of rail, 60 factories, different types of factory buildings, 8,500 machine tools, 7 electrical stations, and 140 kilometers of underground cable, and 46 overhead. And I have no idea how to convert kilometers into miles or whatever, because we're the only country that does that shit. So, under Bismarck, Germany was a world innovator in the building of the welfare state. German workers enjoyed health, accident, maternity benefits, canteens, changing rooms, and a national pension scheme. I love how they call theirs a scheme, because it's exactly what it is. We call it a 401k, and retirement, but it's called the scheme for a reason. They're not the only country that calls it that. Africa, their insurance is called, it's a scheme. I know that's not what they mean it to be, like how what we think is a scheme. You know what I'm talking about, like a scam artist? But see, we use some words differently than theirs, but it's just funny how they use that word for their retirement and their medical and all of that stuff. Anyway, lacking a technological base at first, the Germans imported their engineering and hardware from Britain, but quickly learned the skills needed to operate and expand the railways. So in many cities, the new railway shops were the centers of technological awareness and training. So by 1850, Germany was self-sufficient in meeting the demands of railroad construction, and the railways were a major impetus for the growth of the new steel industry. However, German unification in 1870 stimulated consolidation, nationalization into state-owned companies, and further rapid growth. Unlike the situation in France, the goal was the support of industrialization, and so heavy lines crisscrossed the Ruhr and other industrial districts and provided good connections to the major ports of Hamburg and Bremen. By 1880, Germany had 9,400 locomotives pulling 43,000 passenger cars and 30,000 tons of freight, and forged ahead of France. The total length of German railroad tracks expanded from 21,000 kilometers in 1871 to 63,000 kilometers by 1913. And they established the largest rail network in the world after the United States, and effectively surpassing the 32,000 kilometers of rail connected Britain in the same year. Wow. There's a whole lot more to Germany. You want me to keep going or go on to another... another empire. I mean, there's a lot to Germany.
Woohoo. I don't know. I think you wanted to do one at a time, but I think you spent about a half hour on it. If you want to move to another one that doesn't have words,
there's still probably another half an hour. There's just a lot to the German Empire. I think they redid the way they had the empires done up before. Okay, we're gonna go on to the next one. Yeah, this one's not as long. What the hell, man? Okay. Ouagadougou, commonly known as the Ghana Empire, was a West African empire based in the modern-day southeast Mauritania and western Mali that existed from 300... from 300 to 1100. I don't know. It doesn't say BC or anything. It just says from 300 to 1100, so I don't know. The Ghana Empire, sometimes also known as Akar, founded by the Sanik people, and was based in the capital city of Kumbai. Complex societies based on the trans-Saharan trade and salt and gold had existed in the region for centuries. So at the time of the empire's formation, the introduction of the camel to the Western Sahara in the 3rd century CE. That might be what it is, CE. served as a catalyst for the transformative social changes that resulted in the empire's formation. By the time of the Muslim conquest of North Africa in the 7th century, the camel had changed the ancient, more irregular trade route into a trade network running from Morocco to the Niger River. The Ghana Empire grew rich from this increased trans-Saharan trade in gold and salt, allowing for larger urban centers to develop. The traffic furthermore encouraged territorial expansion to gain control over the different trade routes. When Ghana's ruling dynasty began remains uncertain among historians. First, the first identifiable mention of the imperial dynasty in written records was made by Muhammad Ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi in 830, I guess that's CE. What is CE? I know BC is before Christ. What is CE? I'm drawing a blank on what CE is. You guys know?
No. I've seen it before. I thought it had to do with Caesar, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Let me see. What does it mean? No shit. It's a element cerium. I know that.
Oh.
No. It's a form of time, but B.C. is before Christ. Here it is. Referring to time.
Common
okay, here we go.
So we are currently
common
in.
Era.
Right. So we, they wanted to get rid of Christ. So CE now means current era. So BCE is before the current era, and ADE is after the current year. Yeah, I think it's after the,
Yeah, AD is Anno Domini.
Yeah,
AD is Anno Domini, or the year of our Lord, referring to the year of Christ's birth. The meaning of BC is before Christ. CE is a recent term. It refers to Common Era and is used in the place of AD.
Right.
So the dates are the same thing. But how?
Yeah, they
what I'm trying to figure out is, well, that's just tough shit. It's still AD for me. I am not using a CE crap.
CE is 2021.
I know it's the same thing as AD. Same thing.
And
they just replaced it.
Right.
It's
freaking
retarded.
And CE is everything from before Christ. But instead, they're calling it Common Era. And I'm like, that's stupid. Because,
it is. Oh, by the way, I'm going to throw this out. That right there goes right along with what I'm about to say. Did you know? And the new Michael Myers freaking Halloween movie. He brutally murdered a gay couple. And they're saying Michael Myers is homophobic.
Doesn't like sex. He doesn't like couples, period, or sex. It's got nothing to do with gender or sexual orientation.
Listen here. This is what I said. I said, I hate to burst your bubble, but all serial killer movies, there's no discrimination for sex or gender. Gender or sexual orientation. They don't care. They just kill. Congratulations, you now just joined the club of being brutally murdered by Michael Myers. Good day. Yeah, I can't believe that shit. That goes along with that. They're offended because Michael Myers killed the gay couple. I'm like, get the fuck over it. Anywho, that's my rant. after centuries of prosperity, the empire would begin to decline in the second millennium and would finally become a vassal state of the rising Mali Empire at some point in the 13th century. So despite its collapse, the empire's influence can be felt in the establishment of numerous urban centers throughout its former territory. In 1957, the British colony of the Gold Coast, under leadership of Kwame Nkrumah, named itself Ghana upon independence in honor and remembrance of the historic empire, though their geographic boundaries never overlapped. Okay, hold on a second. I got it. Okay. So, theorizing concerning the origins of Ghana had been dominated by disputes between ethno-historic accounts and archaeological interpretations. The earliest discussions of its origins are found in the Sudanese chronicles of Mahmoud Kati and Abdi al-Rahman as-Sadi. According to Kati's Tariq al-Fatish, and a section probably composed by the author around 1580, but citing the authority of the chief judge of Messina, Ida al-Messina, who lived somewhat earlier. 20 kings ruled Ghana before the advent of the prophet Muhammad, and the empire extended until the century after the prophet. So in addressing the ruler's origin, the Tariq al-Fatash provide three different opinions, that they were Sanik, Wangara, or the Sanhaja Berbers. Al-Kati favored another interpretation in view of the fact that their genealogies linked them to this group, adding, what is certain is that they are not Sanik. While the 16th century versions of the genealogies might have linked Ghana to the Sanhaja earlier versions. For example, as reported by the 11th century writer Al-Idrisi, the 13th century writer Ibn Saad said, noted that the rulers of Ghana in those days traced their descent from the clan of the Prophet Muhammad, either through his protector, Abi Talib, or through his son-in-law, Ali. He says that 22 kings ruled before the Hijra and 22 after. And those, hold on, lost some place. So while these early views led to many exotic interpretations of a foreign origin of Ouagadou, these views are generally disregarded by scholars. I've learned a lot about some of the from like Muhammad and all of them. I just got through watching the miniseries The Bible, and while I was watching it, I was going through these three volumes of Bible stories, and I had no idea about who's related to who from Ishmael, which, as everybody should know, was Abraham's first son, and that's how the Muslim religion was formed, was because of Ishmael. And I'm going, I knew about Ishmael, but I'm talking about other families related to Muhammad, the prophet, and all of that. And, yeah, I learned a lot, which is kind of cool. That's why I'm kind of glad I do different studies of different things, and it kind of helps tie in all of the stuff that we go over.
Interesting.
It is. I did not know. I was like, okay. So,
I mean, I've forgotten. I used to know a lot. I've forgotten a lot. I remember some, but I've forgotten more than I remember. And sometimes when you say things or other people start talking, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that. you know. But
oh yeah,
if,
and
if
that's
asking that right question. My memory sucks.
Oh, mine does too. I've had 11 TBI. Mine sucks big time. So here are some theories concerning the foundation of Ghana. Oh, excuse me. French colonial officials, notably Maurice Delafosse, or Delafosse, whose works on West African history has been criticized by scholars such as Charles Montiel and Robert Cornevin and others for being unacceptable and too creative to be useful to historians in relation to his falsification of West African genealogies, concluded that Ghana had been founded by the Berbers, a nomadic group originating from the Benue River, and linked them to North African and Middle Eastern origins, while Delafosse produced a convoluted theory of an invasion by Judeo-Syrians, which he linked to linked them to the Fulbe.
Huh.
Others took the tradition at face value and simply accepted the nomads had ruled first. Raymond Monney, synthesizing early archaeology, various traditions, and the Arabic materials in 1961, concluded that foreign trade was vital to the empire's foundation. More recent work, for example, by Nehemiah Levzian, in his classic work published in 1973, sought to harmonize archaeology, descriptive geographical sources written between 830 and 1400. The older traditions of the Tariq from the 16th and 17th centuries, and at the last traditions collected by the French administrators, I can't pronounce their names either, concluded that local developments stimulated by trade from North Africa were crucial in the development of the state. And he tended to favor the more recently collected traditions over the other traditions in compiling his work. While there's not been much further study of either traditions or documents, archaeologists have added considerable nuance. I mean, it's hard if you think about it. If some of these countries, I mean, everybody started in the Israel, Jerusalem, and all those areas. And they spread out.
Yeah.
Well, especially. Yes. But also after the flood, and then everyone had to go all the different countries. So, yes, I mean, by the time, and then when we're talking about how they changed the dates here, and finding out who went where and where this country really started from.
Right.
Of the 12 disciples, believe it or not, see, I didn't know this, Matthew ended up in India, of all places. From Jerusalem to India is where he traveled to. I forgot which one, went to Africa. So,
I heard, wait a minute, yeah, I heard that story. If you say his name, I'll remember, but I saw a story about the apostle that went to Africa.
It wasn't Peter, because Peter was killed in Rome.
No. It wasn't Peter. Peter stayed in Rome. Timothy?
But anyway, they go, this is how, like you're talking about the nomad. And so you have people that go from one area, and there's all this backbiting and fighting, but no, that's not how this started. And how some dumbass was saying that pygmies were in Northern Ireland, and there's never been a pygmy in Northern Ireland, which is why they call them the leprechauns, which is not true. And so, honestly, everybody's moved around and shifted from one country to another. The Spanish-Indian trade route, I mean, come on. The Spaniards and the Indians have colonized, if that's a word you want to use, a majority of every country in the world. Believe it or not, it wasn't the bridge. So, yeah. So archaeological research was slow to enter the picture. While French archaeologists believed that they had located the capital, Combe-Salle, in the 1920s, when they located extensive stone ruins in the general area given in most sources for the capital. Others argued that elaborate burials in the Niger Bend may have been linked to the empire, and it was not until 1969 when Patrick Munson excavated at Dar Sachit in modern-day Mauritania that the probability of an entirely local origin was raised. The Dar Sachit, that's so cool, Sachit, site clearly reflected a complex culture represented by 1600 and had architectural and material culture elements that seemed to match the site at Combe-Salle. And more recent work in Dar Sachit and in Dar Nima and Dar Walada, it has become more and more clear that as the desert advanced, the Dar Sachit culture moved southwardly into the still well-watered areas of northern Mali. Don't forget, in all these, where there's a lot of desert, they had to migrate with the water and the wildlife, how they live. I mean, the nomads, they would follow the rain patterns. If not, they'd have no water, and they would have died. So this now seems like a likely story of the complex society that could be documented at the Combe-Salle. So given the scattered nature of the Arabic sources and the ambiguity of the existing archaeological record, it's difficult to determine when and how Ghana declined and fell. The earliest descriptions of the empire are vague as to its maximum extent, though according to Al-Bakri, Ghana had forced Ouagadougou's I am butchering this name. Oh, there's going to be a silent letter. Ouagadougou's. Yeah, okay, that's how you pronounce it. Ouagadougou's. In the desert to accept its rule sometime between 970 and 1054. By Al-Bakri's own time, however, it was surrounded by powerful kingdoms, such as Sila. Ghana was combined in the Kingdom of Mali in 1240, marking the end of the Ghana Empire. A tradition in historiography maintains that Ghana fell when it was sacked by the Almoravid movement in 1076. Although the Ghanaians resisted attack for a decade, but its interpretation has been questioned. Conrad and Fisher in 1982 argued that the notion of any Almoravid military conquest at its core is merely perpetuated folklore derived from a misinterpretation or a naive reliance on Arabic sources. Well, fine. So some of these empires, like I said, they didn't last very long. And there's not going to be a whole, and think about it. But all the way back in that time, how much stuff got written down? And if it got written down, where was it written? How was it written? How was it preserved?
They didn't even have a written language. And this includes the Jews until, you know, long after the flood. I mean, Noah didn't really have anything written down. And then I think it originally was like Sanskrit on skins and parchment paper.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean how much care you think of it. Yeah, the majority of stories came down word of mouth. And think of telephone. You ever play that game, telephone?
No. But yeah, I mean, majority of, Whisper Down the Lane. No. What about Whisper Down the Lane? Oh, yeah, yeah. You know where you start a story with something and it's completely different by the time it gets to the end? Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to remember all these stories. So that's why, to, you know, the in my opinion, though the Bible may have some discrepancies or whatever, for the most part, I truly believe it's the Word of God, because how else could the stories have followed through so many centuries and match up with stories from other cultures that came across these people? The Bible isn't just a religious book. It's a historical book. The stories, there's evidence of all of these stories that are in there. So at any rate, so that's, you know, my,
but that's like with any, like the Mayans, and then also in Egypt, all of the pictographs and all of that stuff. I mean, they didn't have anything to write on. They wrote
exactly
on the wall.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. We need to take all of this into consideration. And this is why, you know, it's hard not to believe the Bible, or that God created us and we were all started at the same place. I mean, and then spread out from there. And these stories, when you listen to all the cultures and the different stories, there's so many of them that tie together. Like you were saying with Ishmael and Muhammad. Muhammad was during the same time as Jesus, and everybody knows. Well,
no,
not everybody. But
no.
Wait, the one who was upset because people accepted Jesus as the Son of God, and he was denounced. Because remember, there's a lot of different Muhammad. And he was denounced.
Oh, the Muhammad. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, with all of these, you're not going to find, like, for instance, how the Bible was written on the scrolls, and they rolled them up. Okay?
Right.
That's how they did it. And so with having issues with stuff like Ghana, some of these countries, they just, there's not enough. I guess you kind of compare that to the fall of Rome, what's left of it. What's the one? Atlantis. Is it real?
Yeah.
Is it really flooded? Is it really at the bottom of the ocean? Because ocean waters changed.
Right. I've heard a lot of stories about Atlantis, the city of Atlantis, and to be quite honest, there's more evidence of it existing. Maybe not the way we think it existed, but there is more evidence of it having really existed than it not being existed. Whether you believe in aliens, that it was controlled by aliens or whatever,
no,
it doesn't matter.
Okay,
think
about it this way.
Its existence is real.
Okay, think about it this way. If aliens were real, do you honestly think they'd come to Earth right now? They'd be like, no, no, these fuckers, no way, we're not getting involved. We're just gonna exit stage left.
I'm sorry, I do not think that the Bible disallows for the existence of extraterrestrials.
No,
I think it's arrogant of us to believe that. That we are. I do not think that the Bible disallows. In other words, the same way the Bible, everybody's going on about dinosaurs, but yet dinosaurs
are in the Bible.
Here when man was.
They're also in the Bible. Yeah.
That right, but people keep trying to say that dinosaurs died out before man got here, which is not true.
Let me get. We've gone sidetracked.
Yeah,
I want to finish finish up Ghana. While there's no clear-cut account of a sack of Ghana in the contemporary sources, the country certainly did convert to Islam for al-Idrisi, whose account was written in 1154, has the country fully Muslim by the date, by that date. The Khaldun, a 14th century North African historian who read and cited both al-Bakri and al-Idrisi, reported an ambiguous account of the country's history was history as related to him by the Uthman. This guy took a pilgrimage to Mecca in 1394, according to which the power of Ghana waned as that the veil that a veiled people grew through the Almoravid movement. Al-Idrisi's report does not give any reason to believe that the empire was smaller or weaker than it had been in the days of al-Bakri, 75 years earlier. In fact, it describes its capital as the greatest of all towns of the Sudan with respect to the area, the most populous and with the most extensive trade. It is clear, however, that Ghana was incorporated into the Mali Empire, according to the detailed account of al-Umari, written around 1340, but based on testimony given to him by the truthful and trustworthy the Sheikh Abu Uthman Sayyid al-Dukali, a long-term resident. His version, Ghana still retained its functions as a sort of empire, a kingdom within the empire, its ruler being the only one allowed to bear the title Malik, and who is like a deputy unto him. God, now I get the tongue twister out of the way. I'm skipping the occupation because, nope. most of the information about the economy of Ghana comes from al-Bakri. Al-Bakri noted that the merchants had to pay a 1 gold dinar tax on imports of salt and 2 on exports of salt. Other products had fixed dues. Al-Bakri mentioned both copper and other goods. So imports probably included products such as textiles, ornaments, and other material. Many of the handcrafted leather goods found in old Morocco also had their origins in the empire. Ibn Hakwai quotes the use of a check, and it's a check, it's C-H-E-Q-U-E, worth 42,000 dinars. The main center of trade was Kumbai Saleh. The king claimed as his own all nuggets of gold and allowed other people to have only gold dust. Wow. How greedy can you be? In addition to the influence exerted by the king in local regions, tribute was received from various tributary states and chiefdoms on the empire's periphery. The introduction of the camel played a key role in the Sonike success as well, allowing products and goods to be transported much more efficiently across the Sahara. These contributing factors all helped the empire remain powerful for some time, providing a rich and stable economy that was to last several centuries. So the empire was also known to be a major educational hub. And their government, testimony about ancient Ghana depended on how well disposed the king was to foreign travelers, from whom the majority of information on the empire comes. Islamic writers often commented on the social political stability of the empire based on the seemingly just actions and grandeur of the king al-Bakri, a Moorish nobleman living in Spain, questioned merchants who visited the empire in the 11th century. And this is what he wrote to the king. He sits in audience to hear or to hear grievances against officials in a doomed pavilion around which stand 10 horses covered with gold embroidered material. Behind the king stand 10 pages holding shields and swords decorated with gold. And on its right are sons of the kings of the country wearing splendid garments and their hair plated with gold. The governor of the city sits on the ground before the king, and around him are ministers seated likewise. At the door of the pavilion are dogs of excellent pedigree that hardly ever leave the place where the king is. Guarding him around their necks, they wear collars of gold and silver studded with a number of balls of the same metals. Wow. But that's how they are. They're lavish. It's kind of like our elite with their, you know, mansion and gaudy clothes and cars and shit. Their country's poor as crap, but they've got everything. Ghana appears to have had a core region, and it was surrounded by vassal states. One of the earliest sources to describe Ghana is Yab Quibi, writing in 889-90, says that under his authority are a number of kings, which included Sama, and it's a question mark because they don't know the other person's name. And so extended at least to the Niger River Valley. These kings were presumably the rulers of the territorial units often called Kafu. The Arabic sources are vague as to how the country was governed. Al-Bakri, far and away the most detailed one, mentions that the king had officials who surrounded his throne when he gave justice, and these included the sons of the kings of his country, which we must assume are the same kings that Al-Yab Quibi mentioned in his account of nearly 200 years earlier. So basically it's word of mouth, like we were talking about word of mouth. How is it going to change? Al-Bakri's detailed geography of the region shows that in his day, or about 1067, Ghana was surrounded by independent kingdoms, and Sila, one of them located in the Senegal River, was almost a match for the king of Ghana. Sama is the only such entity mentioned as a province, as it was in Al-Kubi's day. Al-Bakri's time, the rulers of Ghana had begun to incorporate more Muslims into government, including the treasurer, the interpreter, and the majority of its officials. Almost done. Not much left. Crap. So the influence of Islam, modern scholars, particularly African Muslim scholars, have argued about the extent of chronology of the Ghana Empire. The African Arabist Abu Abdullah Adelabu was claimed that some non-Muslim historians played down the territorial expansion of the Ghana Empire in what he called an attempt to understate the influence of Islam in old Ghana. In his work, The Ghana World, a Pride for the Continent, Adelabu maintained that works of such Muslim historians and geographers in Europe as the Cordoban scholar Abu Ubayad al-Bakri had neglected to accommodate contrary views of non-Muslim Europeans. Let me tell you something. Their names are a mouthful. And here we think that Southerners who have two middle names or two surnames is bad. Adelabu claimed that constant cold shouldering of Ibn Yasin's geography of the Maliki school, in which he gave a comprehensive account of social and religious activities in the Ghana Empire. He asserted that there has been a well-attested compositional bias in the documentation of Ghana history. especially by European historians, on topics related to Islam and ancient Muslim societies. Adil Abu wrote that the early Muslim documentaries, including Ibn Yasin's revelations on ancient African major centers of Muslim culture crossing the Maghreb and the Sahel to Timbuktu, I can pronounce one word, downward to Bonoman, had not just presented researchers in the field of African history with solutions to the scarcity of written sources in large parts of the sub-Saharan Africa. It consolidated confidence in techniques of oral history, historical linguistics, and archaeology for authentic Islamic traditions in Africa. Now, people need to take a lesson from this shit. This is the reason why we are supposed to teach history. So people don't have to squabble about how things really went down. Because if you get rid of all of your history or don't keep a well record of it, nobody's going to freaking know. So
yeah, but the problem is that they're changing history. It's not just that they're not teaching it. They're changing it and teaching lies.
Well, here's the thing. You can't change history. You can change how you teach it, and you can lie about it, but you can't change what happened. That's the whole thing.
No. That's why they burn books, so that you can't find the truth.
True, and that's what I'm saying. So they still have issues about their country and the empire and how it really started. And non-Muslims and Muslims are arguing about how much. You know what? Nobody really gives a shit. I don't care. I don't care about who. It doesn't matter. We're here today, and that's all that matters. If something bad happened, you fix it. If you can't fix it, then you never do it again, to never repeat it. And so what their issue is, Muslims are pissing and moaning about the fact that, I say that, but we get that everybody had their foot in history back in the day, our forefathers. Everybody knows this. But the thing is, I don't know. It's one of those things I can't put my foot on it as to what I'm trying to say, but.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, you can't change it. We get it. But there's no fair amount of ranting and raving about the past is going to change the present or the future. You can't.
Nope. That's all you can do is learn from the past in order to change the future. Unfortunately, though, that does not meet the narrative. They want to they want to change the past so that they can form. They don't want to correct it. I don't know how to put it, but the thing
here's the thing. Take slavery. Every country in the world has had slaves, right? But here's the thing. A lot of people don't want to admit how slavery started for a lot of countries. And when they find something they don't want to hear, they want to erase it. Erase everything. Oh, no. You can erase it all you want. It still happened. And so the same thing with history of any country. You can't erase history. I don't care if cancel culture cancels every freaking thing there is. It still happens, whether you like it or not. And that's all there is to it.
No, I'm agreeing.
Okay. El Gaba. According to Al-Bakri, the major part of the city was called El Gaba and was the residence of the king. It was protected by a stone wall and functioned as the royal and spiritual capital of the empire. It contained a sacred grove of trees in which priests lived. It also contained the king's palace, the grandest structure in the city surrounded by other domed buildings. There was also one mosque for visiting Muslim officials.
Mm-hmm.
El Gaba, coincidentally, or not, it means the forest in Arabic. I don't know why they put that in there, but hey, whatever. The Muslim district, the name of the other section of the city is not recorded. In the vicinity where the wells with fresh water used to grow vegetables, it was inhabited almost entirely by Muslims who had 12 mosques, one of which was designated for Friday prayers, and had a full group of scholars, scribes, and Islamic jurists. Because the majority of these Muslims were merchants, this part of the city was probably its primary business district. It is likely that these inhabitants were largely black Muslims known as the Wagara, and are today known as the Fulani and the Jakhan. I can't pronounce that. It's Jakhanke. The separate and autonomous, huh?
Jakartan, like Jakarta? Jakarta?
No, not Jakarta.
Jakarta, something.
Jakunky. It sounds like Jakunky, but it's probably not how you pronounce it. Hold on, let me see if it's got a little Jahanka. It's Jahanka. Okay, whatever. The separate and autonomous towns outside of the main governmental center is a well-known practice used by the Fulbe and the Jakhanka Muslims throughout history. The 17th century chronicle written in Timbuktu, the Tariq al-Fatash, gave the name of the capital as Kumbai. Beginning in the 1920s, French archaeologists excavated the site of Kumbai, Salah. Although there have always been controversies about the location of Ghana's capital and whether Kumbai is the same town as the one described by Al-Bakri. The site was excavated in 1949 and 1950 by Paul Thomasy and Raymond Monny, and by another French team in 1975 to 1981. The remains of Kumbai are impressive. Even if the remains of the royal town with its large palace and burial mounds have not been located, another problem for archaeology is that Al-Idrisi, a 12th century writer, described Ghana's royal city as lying on a riverbank, a river called the Nile.
Huh.
Following the geographic custom of the day of confusing the Niger and Senegal rivers, which do not meet, as forming a single river often called the Nile of the Black. Whether Al-Idrisi was referring to a new and later capital located elsewhere, or whether there was confusion or corruption in his text is unclear. However, he does not state that the royal palace he knew was built in 510 AH, whatever AH is, suggesting that it was a newer town rebuilt closer to the Niger than Kumbai. So they got a little map. And, but I don't know how much rivers and things are going to change. You know what I'm saying? Over a couple centuries. I don't know. They're pretty much the way they were, unless there was a massive earthquake, volcano, tsunami or something. That can change, you know I'm saying, the geographical picture of an area. But that's it for Ghana. Yeah, Ghana, short, sweet, to the point. Okay. Okay, we're going to try this. I'm gonna try Goguryeo, also called Goryeo, was a Korean kingdom located in the northern and central parts of the Korean Peninsula, and the southern and central parts of Manchuria. At its peak of power, Goryeo. Hold on a second. Goryeo controlled most of the Korean Peninsula. large parts of Manchuria and parts of its eastern Mongolia and inner Mongolia, along with Bakji and Sila. Goryeo was one of the three kingdoms of Korea, and it was an active participant in the power struggle for the control of the Korean Peninsula, and was also associated with the foreign affairs of neighboring polities in China and Japan. The Samguk Sagai, a 12th century text from Goryeo, indicates that it was founded in 37 BC by Jumong, a prince from Boryeo, who was enthroned as, yeah, good luck with this one, Dongmyeong. God, I knew I shouldn't have tried Korea.
You may want to learn Korean first.
Was what? Huh?
You may want to learn Korean first.
You know, I watch a lot of Korean dramas, and I listen to some of the words that you have in their movies. They have a lot of the same sound. The names are always, they repeat a lot of their names.
Right.
I've learned a few Korean words. Ajisi means mister. Opa. I learned just a few, and I mean a few words. I just actually watch it. I don't even read the subtitles anymore on most of it, because you can pretty much figure out what the hell they're saying. Anywho, oh, it's called Goryeo. It's not Goryeo. It's alternatively spelled Goryeo, which means Korea. Wow. I'm glad I read that. Okay. So the earliest record of Goryeo can be traced from the geographic monograph of the Book of Han. The name, the other word, Hanja, is attested in the name of Gaguli County or Goryeo County. Yeah, I'm skipping it. Forget it. I'm not doing Korea. I'm sorry. I cannot. I'm not going to butcher. There's just too much. I can't do it. I'm sorry, guys. I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I don't want to butcher. I'm skipping all Asian countries. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm being racist because I can't pronounce shit from your country. And I don't want to. I really don't want to do that.
Yeah, you don't want to know.
No, I don't want to do that. Let's see. Well, what time is it? There's no point in starting another empire. Good deal. So they friggin' alphabetized all the damn things, and they had it in order of each dynasty or each empire, and freaking Wikipedia went and changed it, and now they put it back in alphabetical order. So it goes from 750 to 1258 to 1496 to 1903, back to 550 BC to 3. So I'm like, you know what? What the hell? I'm done. We'll go back. I'm gonna skip over the Asian countries, not because I want to, but because I don't want to butcher your language. It's hard enough with some of these other names, but I don't want to, you know, do all that crap. Tomorrow's medical. I know Dr. Phil had mentioned all the different types of manganese. I know we've gone over them 100 times, and we'll go over them 100 more.
Because you don't memorize them. Well, it doesn't hurt to hear them multiple times.
No, because you're going to learn. Because you know what? Here's the other thing. Not everybody listens to every single show. And
exactly.
They don't go, dear God, I wish the retard would just shut up, because she's like, yeah, I know. Because sometimes that's the way I feel. I've got my vitamins and mineral placard, and then I'm going to go over that. and then he can also go into what's better to have for whichever, you know, issue. And then I know there's like 10 different types of magnesium, and we've already talked mm-hmm. about mag citrate, which is your laxative. So you got to know which one you're taking before you take it. So, yeah, so that's what we're going to go over. And if I have time, if we cover it all, I might touch on some of that home doctor book that I got. And if I feel motivated tomorrow, I can use that word loosely. I'm gonna start doing the YouTube channel again. I have fallen a slack back on the last 6 months because I didn't give a shit.
I have bookmarked. I've seen some of the videos, of course, when you posted them. But we've also got promoted a little bit more because there's hardly any. There's only like three of us, I think, that are subscribed.
There's six, but here's the thing. Like I said, I'd like to get some introductory videos
right.
from the rest of our staff. Hint, hint, Lorna, Bobby.
What?
I can show you how to sleep.
I just mean like, hey, I'm Major Lorna Munson. I'm a major pain in the ass. Blah, blah, blah.
I can show you how to do that, too. I'm good at it.
No, just something simple that I can put on. I don't care if it's like a minute. I don't care. It doesn't have to be anything long-winded. And that's it.
I wanted to show you guys. I'm going to put on Telegram. I practiced and used my fire thing, the thing I got to cook like a pot of coffee on.
Oh, those are cool. But, yeah, I'm going to go back to start. I'm going to do some medical little introductory things on the books that I have. And the reason why I'm – because of – and I say this, think about it. You got to think about this. If everybody leaves in the medical field, if they leave their jobs, right, and until they get rid of this bullshit mandate thing that they want to say is the rule of the land, you're not going to have a doctor – or anybody to go see, unless you have a doctor that does not buy into the bullshit mandate. So I'm trying to get as much medical knowledge of books as I can so I can help out. Now, here's the thing. It's called advice for a reason. Take it or leave it. Don't care. You know what I'm saying? I'm not a doctor, so... You know what I'm saying? If you want to believe or go by what I, you know, advise, that's fine, cool, whatever. But there is the, what you call it, the little, not warning, what you want to call it, disclaimer. I'm not a doctor. I've only been a nurse for 21 years, and that's it. Take it for what it's worth. So we try to do as much as we can and give out as much information as we can for everybody, because you may need it pretty damn quick, probably within the next few months, who knows, with what's all the people that's quitting left and right. So, Bobby, are you still with us or are you napping?
He's napping.
Yeah.
When isn't he? I think I swear. I think he just
let us in.
Oh, did you guys hear Joe Manchin is leaving the Democratic Party?
Well, not quite. He offered to leave
and become an independent. Yeah.
Shit! That must have just happened today because last night. I heard him say he wasn't planning on leaving. It was just an offer on the table, but nobody took him up on it. He said, if I'm an embarrassment or whatever, then I'll leave, but they didn't take me up on it. You know, so I guess somebody must have taken him up on his offer. That's okay. Yep. Did you see what they did to Jim Jordanson? I mean, he
no.
The left is a big garbage. I mean, that's okay. I'm driving down through Lancaster, and there are people that have signs in their yard that say, please only vote for Republican candidates. I'm like, wow. And they put the name, and then they had like the signage for the different ones. But the problem is that a lot of the positions that we're voting on the second, there is no competition. There's nobody else running, unless you write somebody's name in. The municipal positions, they're judges and stuff. There's nobody running against them. Some I think are Republicans and others are Democrats because it doesn't really say on the website. I'm going to go and I am going to vote. Some of the people, I recognize their names. I mean, I've lived in Lancaster for a long time. My sister's lived here for, oh, my God, how old are we? 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, so even here's the thing, though. Here in Lancaster, there are good Democrats. You know, I don't want to get rid of people who are helping our community. I want to get rid of rhinos just as much as I want to get rid of socialists, Democrats. But not all Democrats are socialists. That's why people need to learn who they're voting for. Fuck the party. Look at the person. Just because the person's listed as a Republican doesn't mean that they're actually believe conservatism or, you know, other stuff that are associated with Republicans. The same thing with Democrats. Just because somebody's listed as a Democrat candidate doesn't mean that they're a socialist. Unfortunately, people see that part of the demon vote.
Get this bullshit.
Comedy.
Get this bullshit. Democrats are pushing Biden to attack Trump. Why? Trump's not president.
Attack him how?
Leave him the fuck alone. Why don't you do your job and act like a president? Oh, yeah, that's right, because he's incapable.
Everything.
No, they want Biden to attack Trump on everything. Why? He's not the fucking president. I'm sorry. Hey, why don't you go to the border where a group of pastors was called in by the Border Patrol because they're finding unaccompanied children are coming across dying or dead. They're gutted because they had drugs put into them and trafficked across the border, cut them open and leave them there for dead. And the Border Patrol they're freaking out about it because of what they're seeing. And 80,000 more freaking illegals are pushing through. And, why don't you go be a president and go deal with that shit? I mean, because you can't handle the Middle East.
That's all Trump's fault. They had a problem that she point blank said. You know, somebody asked her a question about what they're doing at the border. They're like, oh, well, you know, we have this mess at the border from the previous administration.
No, we didn't.
I know.
Biden's priority is not protecting the American republic. We're not a fucking democracy. All they care about is just attacking Trump, keep attacking Trump, and he's not even freaking president anymore. And why don't you do what you're supposed to do and protect this country, but I guess it's not important because the American people.
Did you see the 4,000 that are in Mexico right now coming up through Mexico and they're attacking the police? And I mean, they're like really violent.
Oh, yeah. The next group, the 70,000 that's coming through, we're all armed and they're going to start shooting at the Border Patrol.
This is right now is just a group of 4,000 Haitians being led by an American
an American, he's an American citizen, but he believes in open border. And they're headed here. They're going to hit us before the group of 60 or 70,000. And, of course, they're not doing anything.
Yeah. It's, if you believe in open borders, please give us your phone, your name and your address so we can allow all the illegals to go live at your house. And you can take care of them. Okay, anywho, this is something totally separate. Ram is recalling 131,000 heavy-duty trucks over fire hazards. So if you have a 2021 Dodge Ram, the heavy-duty, the 2021 and 2022 models, there's a fire hazard. So, and what catches on fire? Oh, there's a short in it, and the turbo diesel, and it could suffer a short and catch fire.
I am not surprised about sound workmanship on, in a 2021 or 2022, and they're probably missing pieces, too.
Well, yeah. it's missing computer chips and all this other bullshit.
Right.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm telling you.
So the Chrysler Fiat engineers are working with the component suppliers and still haven't been able to find a root cause for the fires. They have no clue.
Probably some Chinese computer chips.
But, yeah, they've got just go look it up. It's one of the articles. I know we've got 3 minutes left. But under auto blog, and it came up as one of my things, but yeah. So Ram is recalling 131,000 vehicles or trucks.
Jesus.
So, yep. Anywho, I'm done. So, Bobby.
Bobby!
What?
Green beer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Get a new line. Go back to sleep, Lorna.
I wasn't sleeping.
Stop.
Three children were found abandoned in Texas with the skeletal remains of a 9-year-old brother.
I've seen that.
God.
Isn't that sick?
Yeah, it's sad.
How quick does it turn into a skeleton in the desert that they're still alive? I said, how quickly does a body turn to a skeleton that they were still alive?
They've been alone for a while.
Yeah, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 15-year-old. No, the 9-year-old was dead. They just found the remains. But go ahead, Bobby.
All right, we got less than a minute.
Talk fast.
Good night. God bless everybody. And we will be back here tomorrow night, same time, same channel. God bless you and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.